The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
The telephone rang. Hello. Silence on the other end. Hello, who is this? The silence on the other end suddenly turned into hysterical and maniacal laughter. Burn! I got you! The man who picked up the phone dropped it. He knew who the caller was. It was the man who intentionally gave him HIV. The man, Daryl Rowe, on trial in England right now, for knowingly and maliciously infecting four men with the HIV virus without their knowledge. This despicable human being had a terrifying system. He would lure men in for sex, and then he would sabotage any protection, and he would infect his victim knowingly. Then he would mercilessly mock them. He would send them abusive texts and phone calls, all the while telling them, ha ha, you're gonna burn. I gave you HIV. Who within the sound of my voice doesn't think this monster should be in jail? If Daryl Rowe moved to California, he would not be behind bars awaiting a court date like he is now. He would be a free man, and he would probably be swiping right to meet his next victim. But in California, starting January 1, it will no longer be a felony in California to knowingly expose a sexual partner to HIV with the intent of transmitting the virus. Now listen to that. You are knowingly infecting someone with HIV to give them the virus. That has to be your intent. Why has California decided to change the law? Because they say that HIV has a stigma to it. Yes. The bill sponsor, Senator Scott Wiener, explained, we are going to end the new HIV infections, and we'll do so not by threatening people with prison time, but rather getting people a test and providing them access to care. So let me see if I have this straight, California. You're going to stop HIV infections by letting terrible human beings continue to spread HIV infections to unknowing victims. That doesn't make any sense at all. And I'm also sorry to break it to you, California, but you cannot destigmatize HIV. I'd like to put a happy face on cancer. You can't. It's a potentially fatal disease. No one wants it. It should have a stigma. What do you think all those little pictures are up in about cancer? What do you think it is that you post on all of the walls in California whenever you walk into an establishment? If they sell alcohol, there at the front door it says, by the way, low fetal birth weight. I don't know why you care about the fetus in the first place, but low fetal birth weight could cause damage to pregnant mothers. You're doing that to stigmatize something that is harmful. HIV-positive people should not be judged by their disease or discriminated against in any way, shape, or form. But the disgusting people who intentionally infect others should be criminalized. California, you have officially gone insane. Your state is burning down in more ways than one, and you're the ones with the matches. Your efforts to normalize and condone this terrorism, because that's what it is beyond revolting. And unfortunately, will have the opposite effect on HIV infections.
It's Wednesday, October 11th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about what MSNBC and NBC News has done. They have just released a story about President Trump. Now listen to this. President Donald Trump said he wanted to what amounted to a nearly tenfold increase in the U.S. nuclear arsenal during a gathering this past summer of the nation's highest ranking national security leaders, according to three officials who were in the room. Trump's comments, the officials say, came in response to a briefing slide he was shown that charted the steady reduction of U.S. nuclear weapons since the late 1960s. Trump indicated he wanted a bigger stockpile, not the bottom position on the downward sloping curve. According to the officials, President Trump's advisors, among them Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, were surprised. Officials briefly explained the legal and practical impediments to the nuclear buildup and how the currently military posture is stronger now than it was at the height of the buildup. Did Trump's call to expand nuclear arsenal lead to Tillerson's moron remark? Revelation of Trump's comments that day come as the U.S. is locked in high-stakes standoff with North Korea over its nuclear ambition, and it is poised to set a fresh confrontation with Iran by not certifying to Congress that Tehran is in compliance. Trump convened a meeting Tuesday with his national security team, which they discussed a range of options to respond to any form of North Korean aggression or, if necessary, to prevent North Korea from threatening the U.S. and its allies with nuclear weapons. The president's comments during the Pentagon meeting in July came in response to a chart showing that the meeting the history of the U.S. and Russia's nuclear capabilities that showed America's stockpile at its peak in the 1960s. But his comments raised questions about his familiarity with the nuclear posture and other issues. Two officials present said at multiple points in the discussion, the president expressed a desire not just for more nuclear weapons, but additional U.S. troops and military equipment. Any increase in America's nuclear arsenal would not only break with decades of nuclear doctrine, but it would also violate international disarmament treaties signed by every president since Ronald Reagan. Nonproliferation experts warn that such a move could set off a global arms race. If he were to increase the numbers, the Russians would match him and the Chinese. There hasn't been a military mission that required a nuclear weapon in 71 years. Details of the July 20 meeting have not been previously reported. They shed additional light on the tensions among the commander-in-chief, members of his cabinet, and the uniform leadership of the Pentagon, stemming from vastly different worldviews. Moreover, the president's comments reveal that Trump, who suggested before his inauguration that the U.S. must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability, voiced that as a desire as commander-in-chief directly to the military leadership in the heart of the Pentagon this summer. Some officials in the Pentagon were rattled by the president's desire for more nuclear weapons and his understanding of the other national security issues from the Korean Peninsula to Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, why am I reading this to you? Why am I giving you this story? Well, what do you think that story does over in China? What does that story do in Russia? What does that story mean to the North Koreans? NBC has taken a position now to run a story about how the president said he wanted, later came back and said, no, they were right. He can't do that. If he did, it would kick off an arms race. And if that happened, it would greatly destabilize the entire world. If he was looking for additional nuclear weapons and you're Chinese, what do you think you do? If you are in a country where everything is run by the state, what do you think their advisors are saying this story means? As we found out after the fall of the Berlin Wall, Russia took all of our newspaper stories, and they believed they were all CIA plants. They believed that we were planting that information in the news to send them messages. Now, has that made our life more secure or less secure? Has this helped us with national security or hurt us with national security? The story goes on to say this is why the president's advisors are calling him a moron. So not only did they put the rest of the world on alert that the president may be doing things that are illegal, which there is no evidence of that. In fact, the story later points out exactly the opposite. But he wants to do this. He wants a big military buildup on the week that he said to North Korea, there's only one thing that's going to solve. Well, what is that? That's war. So NBC decides to release a story that puts us all in grave danger. They're willing to go out and they're willing to blast President Trump for political reasons. And they're willing to possibly destabilize the entire world. In a completely unrelated story, Stu, can you give me the update from Rowan Farrow?
Yeah, Ronan Farrow, of course, was reporting on the Weinstein case. He's the one, he was working on it for 10 months, 10 months of research.
This is Mia Farrow, Woody Allen's son.
Yes. And so another thing you might know about Ronan Farrow is he's an employee of NBC News.
Hang on just a second. Mm-hmm. He's a respected journalist. Mm. I don't know what for, but he has won several
huge awards.
Yes, he's won huge news awards. Mm-hmm. He's a respected journalist at NBC.
And by far, the most accomplished thing he's ever done is the story about Harvey Weinstein. I mean, this is going to set his career for... I mean, this is a huge story. He, by all accounts, did a great job reporting it, was diligent, was threatened personally by Harvey Weinstein with a lawsuit during this process. Really did... He took on everybody. And it's interesting that a guy being paid by NBC News winds up releasing the biggest story of the year for The New Yorker.
Now, hang on just a second. Mm. It's not that he just went out. NBC told him to go find another outlet to publish this. Now, this on the heels of Saturday Night Live on Saturday, having whole bunches of Weinstein jokes and shockingly cutting all of them and not making any reference to Harvey Weinstein at all.
And there's an interesting, I guess, a side-by-side there. Because you might say, and I have no problem with them reporting the NBC thing, or the nuclear arsenal thing. You could argue it's just a leak. But if it's a news organization, I think they have a legitimate stance to say, you know what? Damn the consequences. Damn the torpedoes. If we have a big news story that's important to the people, we're going to bring it out. You just can't make that point when you just gave the biggest story of the year to The New Yorker because you were afraid of the consequences from Harvey Weinstein. You can make the point about the nuclear story being legitimate, but it is obviously an actual danger to our national security. Now, that doesn't mean you don't print it. I mean, if it's a real story and it's really important, you can still do it. But I mean, they were not worried about the consequences of actual nuclear world war, but they were worried about the consequences of Harvey Weinstein. That is an incredible statement. And I mean, you want to talk about priorities? I don't mind you saying damn the torpedoes. But if you're going to take one of these things into account to not report a news story, maybe the one about the 10 times nuclear arsenal increase is the one you skip.
I see. I didn't see those two stories connected at all.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure neither do the people at NBC.
Really? Because I thought it was a pretty direct...
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
It's just happenstance that I brought them up side by side. The Equifax breach impacted roughly 143 million consumers, and it's just gotten bigger. Now they've added 2.5 million people to that list.
Just the 2.5 million, though? Because that's almost nothing.
That's it.
They've seemingly breached more people than actually exist.
Try this one. Yahoo just announced that their 2013 breach in 2013 impacted 3 billion user accounts.
If you would have said how many people have electricity in the world, I don't know that I would have been north of 3 billion.
Yeah. Yahoo, 3 billion people. Now, that is 3 times the original estimate.
Wow.
You should know there's a good chance that your personal information has been exposed, and it does not go away. Identity thieves can go and buy your information on the dark web for months, even years after a breach. They can use it to commit crimes in your name, even steal from your 401k. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to fix it with you. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more of the threats to your identity and help you fix them. Call now, LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck and get 10% off your LifeLock membership. It's LifeLock.com, promo code Beck, and save 10% now at LifeLock.
Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck.
There's an amazing letter that came from Jeffrey Katzenberg. I want you to listen. Next hour, I'm going to explain to you how I believe this is the Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall has fallen on sex discrimination, I think. The world is changing because of this, I think, and I hope. But you should mark it. So Harvey Weinstein writes a letter, I think it was on Sunday, and said, hey, the board is thinking about firing me. I need all of my friends to rally around me. Please tell the board not to fire me. So Jeffrey Katzenberg, who worked with Weinstein when he was at the Disney company and knows him, said that he was shocked by this desperate letter, and he didn't know what to do. And Katzenberg said he was so unnerved by the request, which came amid the mounting allegations, that he didn't quite know what to do. Quote, I was paralyzed. I didn't know whether I should respond or respond and express the way I truly felt. He said he had to call several friends and ask them and say, I just can't let this stand. Now, listen, this is Jeffrey Katzenberg. This is one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. And he had to call people and say, do I keep my mouth shut? Because I really feel I have to write the letter. He said every single person said, Jeffrey, you have to write the letter. He wrote it, and then he called them back and said, let me read this. Are you sure I hit send? He said, I called a whole bunch of people and read it to him over the phone before I hit send. The most powerful man in Hollywood. Listen to the letter. Harvey, here's the bottom line. You stated in your email below that a lot of the allegations are false, as you know. Well, actually, I don't know. And given the timing of the circumstances, I have no way of knowing. However, you yourself, in your quotes, have acknowledged that you have behaved inappropriately. So it seems to me we're now down to degrees of horrible. You have done terrible things to a number of women over a period of years, and I can't in any way say this is okay with me, because it's not at all. I'm sickened by it. I'm angry with you and incredibly disappointed in you. There appear to be two Harvey Weinsteins, the one that that I have known well, appreciated and admired, and the other who I have not known at all. As someone who has been a friend of yours for 30 years, I'm available to give you advice on how to at least try to make amends. If possible, address those that you have wronged and possibly find a path to heal and redeem yourself. But having watched your reaction, seen the actions that you have taken, and read your statement, I will tell you, in my opinion, you have gone about this all wrong, and you're continuing to make a horrible set of circumstances even worse. I doubt this is what you want to hear from me, and most likely you aren't interested in my advice, but that's the way I see it. I remain available, Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Wow. I mean, that is pretty strong. And
it's strong and yet telling that he didn't just hit send.
Yeah, well, there's a couple telling parts of it. A, he was actually hesitant, even now. I mean, even after this has come out, he was hesitant to actually send it. B, you know, he seems to have, I don't know, he says he didn't, this is the Katzenberg I didn't know, or this is the
Weinstein
I didn't know all of these years. It's hard to imagine. It really is. Everybody knew it, it seems like.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there was a story that happened last week while I was away, and I have been so just incensed by this thing that I wanted to get Kelly Shackelford on. Now, Kelly is a guy who is an attorney and is with, the Legal Counsel, the Liberty Legal Counsel, and he's done some amazing work, and I wanted to get him on, but just to refresh your memory, let me start with the audio. This is a coffee shop in Seattle, and it's run by, a gay guy or a gay couple, and what they see in their coffee shop are these people who are in the coffee shop just talking. They're not handing out literature. They're not doing anything. They're just having coffee. They have been outside handing out some sort of Christian literature about I think it's abortion. And this just lights a fire under the coffee shop owner. And listen to what happened.
Well, I'm gay. Okay. You have to leave.
So are you denying a service?
I am, yeah.
So why aren't we allowed to stay? Because
this is offensive to me. I own the place.
Was it
I have a right to be offended.
Yeah.
So I have a right to say...
Did anyone buy anything in the store?
I didn't know.
So where did this come from?
That came from outside the store.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, there's a lot of us in the city. I didn't leave anything in your store.
So something you found on public property.
I saw it.
Shut up. You just admitted to it being you.
Right. Yeah. So
shut up.
What about it offends you? Okay.
There's nothing else you can say.
So we're not welcome here.
I do not want these people in this place.
So you're not willing to tolerate our presence?
Extremely offensive. Can you tolerate my presence?
We are.
Right, we're actually in the coffee shop.
Really? If I go get my boyfriend right now and right here, you're going to tolerate that?
That would be your choice.
Are you going to tolerate
it? Do it with
your place. Ask question. No, you're going to sit right here and watch it.
Well, no, I mean, we don't want
to
watch that.
Well, then I don't have to tolerate this.
Well, that's true. I mean, you
then leave. All of you. Tell all your friends don't here.
Okay.
Okay.
Just know that Christ can save you from that lifestyle.
Yeah, I like ass. I'm not going to be saved by anything. Okay? He's hot.
You wouldn't. You would be bearings.
Okay, great.
It's not a joke.
Good, I'm glad.
You won't be.
We'll pay for you guys.
Pay away, dear.
All right.
Thank you.
Alrighty then. Well, Seattle has proved itself.
Shut up! It's mine! I will
keep walking. Let's go.
You thought it was a $1 of safe space? Yes. Seattle likes to talk about safe space a lot, but I guess Seattle's not tolerant at all.
Stop! Stop! All of you! Just let me.
So now, me personally, I think the coffee shop guy can do whatever he wants in his own store. If he's offended by that, I want to know who the people are that are going to be bigoted and kick people out. This is the same thing that I've said about the Christians that don't want to be a photographer or they don't want to make a wedding cake. However, in those cases, I've said, you must serve them something from the store. You can say, I want a wedding cake, and they can say, no, I don't want to make a wedding cake because it goes against my religious beliefs, and I believe I would then be participating in that religious ceremony, which I find sacred. Then you can say no. But you can't kick a gay guy out or a gay couple out because they want to buy a cupcake in your store. I've never been for that. However, the libertarian in me says, whatever. If you want to be a bigot, you can be a bigot. I'm just not going to go to your store. I really believe that this needs to go to court in Seattle. Now, I'm afraid of the outcome, but this needs to go to court. And I wanted to bring Kelly Shackelford in to get his opinion. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hey, Glenn. And by the way, just to be clear, the name of the group that I'm representing is First Liberty First Institute.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm sorry.
People can go to firstliberty.org and look at all the religious freedoms cases until their eyes turn red. There's tons of this stuff going on, and this does connect, obviously, to that issue. We actually have a case with Oregon Bakers, a wonderful Christian family, who not only was attacked by the state for not customizing a wedding cake, but actually were fined, were bankrupted, and were told by the judge they were not allowed to speak publicly their beliefs on marriage. So this is definitely an issue that's going on around the country.
Okay, so Kelly, this seems to me like a clear cut win in any sane courtroom. Do we have enough sane courtrooms to be able to bring this? Should these people bring this case to court?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is clearly a violation of what you call the accommodation laws, public accommodation laws. It's like you say, the libertarian, the more pure libertarian approach would say, let people do what they want with their businesses and deny service, and let the free market take care of that, because nobody would want to go to those stores.
Right.
But we've passed laws in most places, public accommodation laws, that say you can't deny people service, essentially because of their identity. Because of their religion, because of their, you know, sexual orientation, et cetera. What you pointed out, though, is the big difference in what people are hearing with all these cases. The cases that have been going on against the Christian people, never have any of those cases have ever, I heard, they denied service.
Correct.
There are things like, for instance, there's a county market and people sell food, and one of the organic salespeople or people that have organic food, somebody found out that on their Facebook page, they have, you know, a Christian stance on marriage being a man and a woman, and they were kicked out of the of being a vendor because of that. Or, again, like the Kleins, people could go to firstliberty.org, put in the search box Klein, and that case will pop up. And you can see a video of these people. I mean, they served everybody. This couple that came in, they served them bakeries all the time. It's just when they asked them to participate in their wedding and express something that they said, oh, we have a religious problem with expressing things about weddings that we disagree with because we see that sacred. It's sort of like going into black bakers and the KKK thinking they have the right to force them to put, you know, do a KKK cake or a T-shirt. They don't. There's a huge difference between saying I don't want you in my restaurant under these laws, and saying we now the government are gonna, let's say this gay coffee shop, we're gonna force you to put something on the cups that you disagree with, some statement or something. Now we're violating the First Amendment. It's not just accommodation. We're actually having the government come in and actually try to force people to express things that they disagree with.
Correct.
Kelly, on this new audio, I mean, I'm obviously very upset at what happened to this the Christians that were in this store. But I'm concerned about the approach of trying to do something legally about it, because I am half convinced they're going to say, you know what? You should not be able to be able, they're going to codify it in law and make it so if you don't want to participate in something you are opposed to.
But if that happens, you've got nothing left. Christians can be hunted, literally. If this is allowed
to
stand,
I'm concerned about
that. I am too. But this can't be allowed to stand.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that in this case, and the facts, as everybody understands it, in this case is, these people didn't do anything or express anything inside the coffee shop.
Nor ask them to participate in anything.
That's exactly right. So this is a pure, because of who you are, we're going to kick you out because of your Christian beliefs, because of your whatever. That's just a, you know, that's a technical violation of the accommodation laws, and I think everybody would agree with that. You know, what they're doing in these other cases is just chilling, because what they're doing with these Christian, whether it's a Christian baker or florist or whoever, they're trying to force, this is the government now we're talking about, is trying to force them to express things that violate their conscience, that violate their beliefs. There's a case at the Supreme Court that they're going to be deciding on this very issue with a baker out of Denver. And so that is where I think everybody is going to be eyes watching. But this is an example of how, you know, it shows you how extreme it can be. Could they file a lawsuit there and win under that statute? I think they could. I don't
Should
know what
they?
Those folks are going to do.
Should they?
You know, they. Who knows? I mean, I think that's up to them and what they want to. It's a violation. I think anybody would know that's a violation of the accommodation statute to kick somebody out because we've got these laws. Again, I want to speak to the libertarians too. They might not like these laws, right?
Yeah.
It might be.
That's
let the free market take care of it.
Right. This is my real problem with it. I don't, as a libertarian, I don't have a problem with that. I'd be glad to know. If I lived in Seattle, I'd be glad to know, okay, I know who that coffee shop is, and I know what they believe, and so I would just never frequent it, and my friends would never frequent it, and I would hope people who even disagree with me on things wouldn't frequent it either, because you would see how they treat people who think differently, and that's just not what we do. However, they have a right to do it. The reason why I'm bringing this up and saying litigation is because, as you were just starting to say, we do have these laws, and the only ones that are getting trampled by them seem to be the Christians.
Yeah, and you had this very thing happen the out in Denver, where the gentleman who, again, this is at the Supreme Court, was asked to do a same-sex wedding cake and, you know, politely said he couldn't. Somebody went in to another baker in the same area and said, I would like you to put something on the cake that was, you know, anti-gay. That person refused. They took it to the same government entity and they refused to prosecute. So that's exactly right. That's not what's supposed to happen. But look, neither case of those cases should happen. The government shouldn't be allowed to tell anybody, whatever their beliefs are, what they have to express, how they have to, you know, a cake, whether it's a cake or a floral arrangement or any sort of expression. We shouldn't have the government telling any of us. If they ever have that power, God forbid. I mean, you know, what kind of free speech do any of us have if the government can force us with punishment or destroying our business, can force us to say things that violate, you know, our most sacred beliefs? So this issue is really important. And I think the other thing that I think comes up from this, Glenn, to me and Stu, is, you know, why can't we have a discussion anymore and a debate, you know, without people being so grotesque, so uncivil?
Yes, horrible.
So, I mean,
horrible.
Yeah, America is all about the exchange of ideas, and even when we disagree with each other, treating each other with respect. And I think that's one of the ultimate themes of all this.
Yeah.
That we see with the protests, shouting people down. We have got to stand for the First Amendment. We've got to stand for the ability to exchange ideas, or we're not the United States of America.
Well, we barely are. But Kelly, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you and appreciate your organization. Kelly has been a friend of this program for a very long time, and we've been following his work. And I'm telling you, it is people like Kelly that are going to keep us free. If we have a chance, it will be because of the efforts of organizations like First Liberty Institute. And if you want to help them, or if you want to alert them or something, or follow what they're doing, I highly recommend, this is an organization you should get involved with, firstliberty.org, firstliberty.org. Thank you so much, Kelly. Appreciate it.
Hey.
The bakery stories always just make me hungry. Is that weird?
No, unfortunately, that's not weird. At least to me, that's not weird. K Casper has outdone themselves again. Tanya and I were lucky enough to be sent the new Wave mattress from Casper. And I'm going to tell you the truth. The first couple of days I had it, I didn't like it. I was used to my other Casper, and I didn't like it. I have had a really expensive Tempur-Pedic mattress that just trapped all the heat, and I hated that. I like the Casper because it didn't trap the heat. And then we put the new Wave in, and within probably 4 days, I started to really, really like it, and I love it. We went up to the ranch. I have the other Casper, and what I thought was always a great night's sleep on the other Casper, I came home and I said to my wife the next morning, I can't believe the difference in this mattress. It is huge, especially if this one is made and designed for people who have chronic pain in your hips or in your knees or in your shoulders. And it features patent pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature for a deeper and more restorative sleep. I have TOS, which is a problem with my shoulders, and sleeping is not comfortable for me. The new Wave mattress is designed now with a breathable foam, so you're going to sleep cool all year round, and the leading designers and engineers in the field to help you with your pain. It's in high demand. It's the new Wave mattress from Casper. Try it in your own home for 100 nights, risk-free. Try it. If you don't love it, just send it back. Actually, they come and pick it up. It's Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck right now. Get $50 towards the purchase of the mattress. It's Casper.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I love this. Cook County. It's up in Chicago. They had a, what was it, 1 cent per ounce
yes.
tax on soda?
Mm-hmm.
They've just repealed that bipartisan because it was a disaster.
As they all are.
Yes. And here's the interesting thing. They've decided to repeal the tax, but now they have to replace it because of the $200 million shortfall in the budget. Mm. Here's an idea. Cut the budget.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
This is the Berlin Wall of sexual politics. I believe what we're seeing with Harvey Weinstein is so important and a chance for us to come together. Angelina Jolie, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ashley Judd, Mira Savino. They have all come out as victims of Harvey Weinstein's disgusting behavior. The situation has gone from really bad to really much worse. In almost a week, allegations have mounted that Weinstein sexually harassed an untold number of women over the last 30 years. Sunday night, Weinstein was fired from his own company. Yesterday, his wife, Georgina Chapman, announced she's leaving him. He had just said, she's standing with me 100%. She said, no, you're a disgusting pig. The couple have 2 children. God bless them, 4 and 7. Yesterday, The New Yorker published a story that dwarfed the original New York Times piece that last week had even more appalling allegations in it. The New Yorker story came out, and it's stunning. But NBC decided not to run that story. The story quotes 2 women who say they were raped by Weinstein and 4 others who describe being touched by Weinstein without their consent. 4 additional women say he exposed himself or masturbated in front of them. 16 former and current employees at Weinstein's company say Weinstein had a system of preying on young actresses by inviting them for business meetings, then dismissing all the other employees from the meeting so he could be alone with the actress. How does a system happen when no one around knows of his behavior? And everyone is so shocked. All of the victims told The New Yorker that they were scared of Weinstein's retaliation, fearing he would ruin their lives. Weinstein released a statement denying the rape and retaliation accusations, ending it with, Mr. Weinstein is hoping that he's making enough progress that he'll be given a second chance. He's only in Hollywood. Now that his ship is sinking so fast, former President Obama, Hillary Clinton, are feigning their surprise that their fundraising pal is actually a creep. Obama, whose daughter Malia interned at Weinstein's company last year, said, Michelle and I have been disgusted by the recent reports about Harvey Weinstein. Any man who demeans and degrades such women in any fashion like this needs to be condemned and held accountable regardless of wealth or status. Hillary says she's shocked and appalled. Yes, but were they disgusted, shocked, or appalled when Weinstein was signing those Democratic fundraising checks? No. All these after-the-fact denunciations from celebrities and politicians, we have to be careful because some of them are meaningless. This Weinstein saga has been made into a left or right issue, and it is not. But one thing is being made crystal clear about the liberal elite, and that is respecting women and protecting them from predators like Weinstein is top priority. Just not when the checks are still rolling in.
It's Wednesday, October 11th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I really don't want to get into the politics of all of this, although they are important. Hillary Clinton took 5 days to come out against Harvey Weinstein. What I really do want to do is I want to talk to you about a way for us to come together. I think personally that conservatives are bored by this story, or they don't think it applies to them somehow or another. This is, you know, the left eating their own. This is a really important story because this gives us something we can come together on. Now, are we ever going to come together with, you know, Ashley Judd? No. But can I stand with Ashley Judd on this? Yes. Should we? Yes. Should we on the right, who say that these things are important? Now, warning, if you dismiss this with Donald Trump, you're going to have very little credibility. This is why you must preserve your credibility. But if you didn't excuse that behavior from Donald Trump, then now is the time to play your card of credibility and say it is wrong no matter which side does it. I really believe this is a Berlin Wall moment. And why I say that is, you know, I've said for a while that everything is about to change. All the old systems are about to change. All the old ways we've done business are about to change. This is part of that. And this is a good part of that. And now we've had it on both sides. And so what's happening? Well, we're either going to have what happened during the Berlin Wall in Germany, which is it reset and it became a free market. It did change in Germany. Or you're going to have what happened in Russia, and that is the old leaders, the old communists, the old KGB guys just took off their uniform, put on a tie, and pretended not to believe in the things that they used to believe in. And they just became more wealthy and more thuggish. There's going to be real change and fake change. Fake change, you're seeing this quite honestly, I think, in Hillary Clinton. First of all, I don't want to judge President Obama at all because I cannot believe President Obama would ever send his daughter into a guy's, you know, he heard that he was a monster. I can't believe anyone would ever send their daughter into that. So I don't know. I don't believe that Barack Obama or Michelle Obama knew this about Harvey. However, I can't believe that all of the good Hollywood friends would send, wouldn't call up Barack and say, don't send your daughter there. Unless it was your daughter's really not his type. And what does that mean? Or is it because, he's not going to do anything against Malia because you're the president of the United States and you're probably the only guy that can hurt him. So he's going to take care of your daughter. Well, what happened to it takes a village? Nobody decided to tell President Obama, or did they? And he dismissed it. We as men need to stand up. We as men need to, I have to tell you, I have not seen this behavior in my own personal life. I have not seen guys treat women like this. Maybe when I was younger, maybe. I don't, not like Harvey Weinstein, but making crass comments. I don't see it. But there's a lot of things that happen that I don't see. But we all have daughters. We all have wives. I don't want my daughters going through this. I don't want them or anybody to have to worry about this kind of stuff. This is so frightening because he had so much power. And yet, I have a really hard time because they all seem to know about it. Can you play the audio from 2013, Sarah? The audio cut. This is from 2013. This is the Oscars. They're announcing the Oscars. And listen to this. And listen to the crowd's reaction.
The 2012 nominees for Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role are Sally Field in Lincoln, Anne Hathaway in Les Miserables, Jackie Weaver in Silver Linings Playbook, Helen Hunt in The Sessions, and Amy Adams in The Master. Congratulations, you five ladies no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein.
Well, listen to that laughter. They knew. They knew. This is 2013. It was an open secret. Is this okay in our society? I mean, this was the problem with Donald Trump. No, just because he's a celebrity, just because he has power, he shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. Those are all the things we've always hated as Americans. We've always stood for the underdog. Here they all knew it was happening. There's a story out, there's two. One, and this gives me hope, Donna Karan had to apologize for coming out and saying, well, it's women. It's just, you know, look at the way they're dressed. They're asking for it. Really? A fashion designer? And you're not exactly designing modest clothes, Donna? You're saying that women are asking for it? She's had to apologize for that. I hope her company suffers. I hope that there are women all over the country who say, I won't wear any Donna Karan anymore because you've exposed yourself as to who you are. Somebody who will excuse this kind of behavior. Rose McGowan. Do you know who Rose McGowan is, the actress, Stu?
Yeah. I mean, I know of her.
Okay. She was Tatum in Scream. She accused Weinstein of sexual harassment before settling a lawsuit against him back in the late 90s. She said she told Ben Affleck all about it. Ben Affleck apparently had a conversation. She was forced to go to, after this attack, she told Ben, they were forced to go. She was forced to go to this press conference. She told him at the press conference what had happened. He was horrified by it. Now, Ben Affleck just came out with a statement, said, I'm saddened and angry that a man I used to work with used his position of power to intimidate, sexually harass, and manipulate many women over decades. The additional allegations of assault that I read this morning made me sick. So McGowan tweets out this. GD, I told him to stop doing that, in quotes. That's what you said to my face, Ben. The press conference I was made to go to after the assault? You lie. This is a Berlin Wall moment. And if you let those who were part of this system, if you let those who joked about it and allowed it to fester without using their own power to stand up, they're just going to change uniforms. And they'll allow it to happen with somebody else. This is a moment where we can all come together. We can put politics aside and we can do the right thing for our wives and our daughters and, quite frankly, our sons. How many of us as conservatives have sat down with our sons and talked about this issue and said, this is absolutely unacceptable, and made this crystal clear to them? Because I got news for you. All the crap they see coming out of Hollywood is teaching them the exact opposite. So, you know, it's interesting because now we've seen this on both sides. Roger Ailes is a great example of this. This is the kind of stuff that Roger was accused of doing. Not to this degree, but pretty close. And, you know, I worked with Roger Ailes, and I wasn't aware of this. I had heard those rumors, but you can't do anything on rumors. I mean, what are you gonna do? I wasn't close enough to say, hey, are you the dirtbag that everybody says you are? You didn't know what was true or not because you never saw it yourself.
And we have to, you know, watch our righteous indignation, which is actually correct. But that doesn't mean we lose due process. That doesn't mean we just start accusing everyone we hear a rumor about horrible things publicly.
No.
I mean, there's a standard here that we have to maintain as a society that protects people that are still innocent until proven guilty.
So this is interesting because Megyn Kelly and I had a conversation one time, and I don't even know if she remembers this. It was in her dressing room. And I went into her office, which was just full of clothes. You know, I got a suit. Megyn Kelly had wardrobe of clothing. And I said, wow, all this for you? And she said, yeah. You can keep it all, too, if you allow Roger to dress you, if you allow, you know, the company to pick out your clothing. And I told her a story. I said, that's really interesting. I said, because at CNN, I remember a time when research came back on one of their hosts and when she was wearing something a little more revealing, her ratings and her test, you know, her test numbers went up and they couldn't say anything to her. And they had to try to lead her to the water. And they were like, gee, you know, look at this test and this test. There's different scores. Why do you think that is? And this person had to say, well, probably because of the way I'm dressed. Oh, I never thought of that. And I knew that had happened at CNN. And I said, interesting. He never has to have that conversation with you. He never has to have those conversations with any of the women here because he's just saying you'll wear this, this, and this. And so he doesn't ever have to cross that line. Very smart. That's the closest thing that we ever got to. But everybody knows that Fox News, you know, they sex it up. Everybody knew that. So what are you going to do? But if Megan would have told me at that time, Glenn, you know what? He's also sexually harassed the women here. Megan, I would have believed. Because Megan was at the top of her career. She had nothing to gain by it. And I just would have believed her. I would have stood by her. In fact, I came out against Roger Ailes after Megan said that because I believed her. Not that I didn't believe Gretchen, but, you know, there was problems with Gretchen back and forth. I didn't know what was true and what wasn't. It's a horse apiece. If you're not involved in it, what do you know? When Gretchen said something, I thought, yeah, that could be true, but I didn't want to throw either of them under the bus. Once Megan stepped in, Megan had nothing to gain out of this and wasn't having those kinds of problems. How many people, Ben Affleck is one of them, how many men in Hollywood knew about this and had the power to stand with them and chose not to? The real question is, are you experiencing this in your life? Is somebody like this in your life? Is anybody standing with you, or if you're the accuser? Or if you were the one that's hearing about it, are you standing with them? When it comes to a mortgage, buying or refinancing, you need to take the stress away, not add more stress. And that's where American Financing is. They're going to customize a loan program that's going to fit your financial needs. If you're a veteran and you haven't used your VA benefits, with the interest rates now as low as they are, it's time to get a new home or to refinance. Now is the time to do this. The Fed didn't raise the rates during the last meeting, but everybody is projecting rates are going to go up over the next meeting. So if you're looking to refinance or purchase, you should move forward as rates are still close to historic lows, but not for long. The salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing are dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that do align with your unique financial goals. And with American Financing, you're going to get straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. American Financing, right now doing reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages, good way to increase your monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining your ownership of your home. So call 1-800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We're so excited. Today we are beginning to film a new series for TheBlaze.com, the chalkboard series. Our first week of shows is going to premiere in a couple of weeks, maybe next week. We just want to make sure that we have everything right. Chalkboard series, unlike you've seen before, reminiscent of the old Fox chalkboards. But these are in-depth subjects that we think you need help with teaching your children. And the first one is, what is socialism? Where has it been tried before? How did it work? Has American ever done it? Why is it wrong? Why could it be right? That's coming on TheBlaze.com.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday we had the guy on about Star Wars, and I said to him, what do you think is happening with the new Star Wars, and how is it going to tell our story now, the world story now? And he brought up something really interesting. He said, I think that if you look at the bad guy and the good guy in the next Star Wars, they're both looking at their role saying, I don't buy into all good, all bad. I don't want to play this role anymore. I don't want to be Darth Vader. Just because the world tells me I have to be Darth Vader. And we had this conversation that it was kind of going to go into a, like, these guys are coming up with a third party. You know, there's the light side and the dark side. And they're like, yeah, I don't want either one of those. And I don't know if that's what is going to happen. But it's interesting because his point yesterday was, this is the way millennials are feeling. And I believe that to be true. And more people are starting to say, you know, I'm tired of my own side. I'm tired of my own side. I'm tired of my church saying one thing and then doing another. I'm tired of my party saying one thing and doing another. I'm tired of my friends saying one thing and doing another. I don't want to be like that. And I refuse to be in this this category that I'm either this or I'm that, because I'm not either one of those. If you listen to CNN yesterday, listen to what, now who's in this?
This is Dana Bash and Chris Cillizza.
So
not friends of the conservative movement per se.
Dan is not, not exactly a friend of the conservative movement. Listen to what she had to say about the Obamas not laying in to Weinstein.
Where are the Obamas? Where is Michelle Obama? Where is President Obama? I mean, he Harvey Weinstein was a, and probably is still a big supporter of them, and certainly of their political, of the president's political efforts. And if just pretend the shoe was on the other foot, and this was a Republican, somebody who's in Hollywood who is a Republican, who is alleged to have done these things, and gave to Republican presidents. Can you imagine the outrage if they weren't, you know, condemning this behavior? And I mean, it's just, it makes no sense at all that they are not coming out and saying something, never mind the question of the donations.
It's not just money. The money is a lot, and Harvey Weinstein gave a ton of money and bundled even more money to both Obama and Clinton. It's the friendship, the fundraisers, he was a vocal supporter of theirs. He was a very high profile, again, on the West Coast, but he was someone who's a big figure anywhere in this country culturally. He was a big supporter of theirs. It's just odd. If someone who gave a million or bundled $1 million to George W. Bush, let's say, to Dana's point, had a similar experience, there would be a huge outcry if George W. Bush did release something. Forget that he's not in office currently. That's not the point. It's not that the issue is not that. The issue is this is behavior that rightly should be condemned when you are the two most prominent faces in the Democratic Party, and they still are, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. The fact that it went 5 days with not a word.
I mean, what?
Wow.
Am I in a parallel universe?
That's CNN.
And they deserve credit
CNN.
For doing that.
They do.
Now, this is right after, this segment happened right after Hillary Clinton finally released something. But before Barack Obama released anything, he did eventually later on that day release a statement that was critical, I guess you could say, of Weinstein. But it took, I mean, they were basically the last ones. I mean, even a lot of the Hollywood people who were more directly affected.
They still didn't really do it. I mean, Barack Obama's statement was really kind of a cloaked threat to Donald Trump.
You do notice that? Yeah, it was anyone who does anything like this should not have the power that Harvey, you know, like it was a little, it seemed like he was taking a shot at Trump as well. But I mean, again, like you don't see this a lot. We play a lot of clips where CNN does things that are really frustrating. Here's one where they, you know, they're taking on.
This is, again, where you're starting to see the rubber meet the road on a gigantic change. There is a gigantic change. Think about this. If you were a conservative and you were a woman, you had a gait on you and it was called Roger Ailes. If you were an actress, you had a gait on you. And it was called Harvey Weinstein. And if it wasn't those guys, it would have been somebody else. If we all come together and we don't turn things into witch hunts, this actually is a really big and great move. If you're for progress, this is a moment of real American progress. This is one of those things I've said. You know, historians are going to look back 100 years from now and look how we handled all of this stuff because everything is changing. This is a really big one. This can really, truly help eradicate. I mean, it's like racism. Sexism is never, it's never going to go away.
No.
But because it's a human disease. However, this can make a huge dent in it. Yep. Unless we turn it into a witch hunt.
And we made this point earlier when it came to the NBC story today, where they released details of some private meeting. It's a leak about Trump wanting 10 times the amount of nuclear weapons because he saw a chart in which we were behind Russia. And everyone in the room was, can you believe this moron? Because that's what supposedly led to the Tillerson moron comment, right? They release this. The potential consequences of that is our adversaries are seeing, wait a minute, the president of the United States behind closed doors is looking to make 10 times as many nuclear weapons as they have. What do we do? How do we react to that? There's real consequences to that.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, global war kind of stuff.
Right. And you could say, oh, they got to power through the news and they got to do it and they can't worry about those consequences, which is a fair point. But, and we made the point earlier, kind of talking about the hypocrisy of NBC, who then gives up the Weinstein story to The New Yorker when their own reporter is working on it. It's Ronan Farrow is their reporter, their employee, and they gave the story to The New Yorker. And the accusation is, well, I mean, they didn't want to deal with the consequences of Harvey Weinstein. They don't care about the consequences of nuclear war.
Have you heard anybody talk about what was the straw here that broke this back? Because, look, the New York Times did something.
Mm-hmm.
Rowan had been working on something for a year.
Yep.
So this was all building up. What was the straw? What was the, you know, with Roger Ailes, it was the weakness, I think, of the Trump thing. It was Gretchen Carlson, and Roger was old and weak. And so it was enough. There was enough chips that it had been taken out of the ankles of that statue, mm-hmm, that it could start to rock. What was it here?
I think, you know, there's a lot of the straws, right, that build up on the camel's back. I think the main thing that pushed this over the edge is they got a hold of the audio from the sting operation in New York City.
But we just heard that.
I know, but I think that had been in the pipeline for a long time. NBC had the audio months ago. And so when you say that we feel like, wow, the straw broke the camel's back and we're all hearing about this now. I think the camel's back was already broken and they've hid this from us for months. They pushed this down the road into another media source for months.
And it's amazing because I could say as a media guy, I could say you can't run that against somebody that powerful, that connected, with that deep of pockets. You can't run that audio, especially with that particular woman by herself. You couldn't run that audio and not get sued. So you better have a stronger case than just that.
You better be buttoned up.
Right. You, mm-hmm, got to be completely buttoned up.
That's fair.
But you did have a lot, you know, you had a lot of people.
Yeah, and they could to go back to your earlier point, you know, NBC News felt the repercussions of this, of Weinstein's pressure and legal threats and what they could do to their company, and all of that was so significant that they pushed this to the New Yorker. Imagine if you're a 22-year-old nobody actress.
You had nothing.
You have nothing.
You have nothing.
Imagine if you're this actress who's trying to make your way and you want to accuse this guy. It really does put a real magnifying glass kind of on why they didn't act for so long.
But isn't it interesting that it was the old media that broke this? It wasn't the new media. For instance, when they came out and said those horrible things about Donald Trump, you know, we've got him in bed with horses. Okay. Nobody seemed to have a problem running that. Okay. But nobody ran it until the new media, BuzzFeed, broke all the rules.
Yeah, you're talking about that the Russian dossier thing.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the Russian media broke all the rules, and then everybody was like, well, it's out, so we have to report on it because now everybody knows about it. Mm-hmm. And that was the excuse. There was no breaking of the rules here. Nobody, BuzzFeed didn't break this story. Nobody broke this story. It wasn't Drudge breaking Monica Lewinsky.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, was the old media breaking it. There's just something's just not right here. I mean, I don't mean that it didn't happen or anything like that. It's just we're missing a part of the story. Something else happened behind the scenes that allowed this ball to start rolling.
And I think we very well may find out that's true. I think part of it, though, that we haven't focused on as much is not just, okay, we've had this Berlin Wall of sexual harassment or that, you know, hey, someone broke this big story. It's also this guy has been a terrible human being to not only the women he's been abusing, but every business partner he's had this entire time. Everybody hates him.
Yeah.
And the power pushes that hatred off where people will like, oh gosh, well, he's powerful. I gotta want to do business with him. I want to win an Oscar. I'm not going to say this publicly. They all hated him privately. And at some point, when that little tiny trickle comes through the wall,
Roger Ailes.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Ailes. So many people didn't like him that as soon as these things were,
it wasn't just a little trickle. As soon as there was enough leaks in the dam
that
you knew
it, right?
That thing's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Once others saw it's going to come down, he's not going to be able to survive this. That's when everybody jumps in.
Yeah.
And says, no, I've got some information too, but nobody wants to be standing there all by themselves because those guys could destroy you. Roger Ailes, and I imagine Harvey Weinstein was much worse. But Roger Ailes, man, you're coming out against Roger Ailes and saying something against him. He had a system down. He would destroy you. He would destroy you.
And if you just go accusation by accusation, there's... even worse than Cosby, Weinstein, probably. I mean, Cosby, and certainly Ailes. Because Cosby, they talked about him drugging women, but this is like, how many? I think the numbers. I don't know.
The numbers are crazy on this.
Yeah, but for Cosby though, too. I guess. It's just because it's more fresh in my memory. But I mean, this latest article is three women accusing him of actually raping them. This is not he said inappropriate things. You know, George Clooney in this article today says he came out and was commenting on this. I thought this was interesting. Clooney has weighed in on the controversy, telling the Daily Beast in an interview that was published Monday that while he was aware of the rumors of young actresses had slept with Mr. Weinstein to get roles, he had been unaware of any misconduct. Shouldn't that be considered misconduct? If you're soliciting women to sleep with you just to get roles, whether you give them to them or not, that's probably over that misconduct line.
That's the problem. That's not a problem there. That is the culture.
It's the casting. The
casting couch.
You
know. It is the culture there. October 1st, Business Insider. Jim Rogers, who is a friend of the program, a legendary investor, he said this in regards to fear, gold, and the sector to be bullish on. He said, and I'm quoting, everyone should have coins, physical coins, as an insurance policy, as an emergency, if nothing else. You hope you never need them, but you got to start owning gold coins, coins that are recognized all over the world. That's pretty remarkable. Jim is a guy who has predicted and saw it firsthand. He saw how George Soros just destroyed the British sterling. He has seen these things before, and he knows what's coming. The only thing we don't know is when. May I highly recommend that you trust Goldline? This is the place where I buy my gold. I will tell you that you can buy stocks, you can buy bitcoins, you can buy whatever. But nothing has the history of gold. Gold is not something I buy as an investment. I buy it as an emergency. This is exactly what he is saying. If, God forbid, we go to war with North Korea and South Korea's economy collapses, that's what, the 10th largest economy? Japan is hit. What do you think is going to happen to the stock market? I want you to call Goldline today and hear about their price guarantee. They have specials this month, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Their price guarantee will make it so a year from now, if the price of gold has gone down, they make it up with more gold. So there's really no way to lose. If you are looking, you can invest, fine. If you're looking for something in case of an emergency, Goldline, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
If you were in Las Vegas just over a week ago, what did it sound like? If you were on the ground, new audio has just been released. Listen.
Everybody go! Go! Run! Keep your head down! Go! Keep your head down! Go! Run! Run! Keep your head down!
That is, that's a bump stock? That's an automatic weapon. Horrifying. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Strategic bombers were flying over South Korea yesterday. Two B-1 Lancers flanked by Japanese and South Korean fighter jets buzzed North Korea in yet another show of force yesterday. Perhaps the weirdest thing about all of this is how routine all of this is beginning to feel. This wasn't an elaborate air show or even, you know, a recon mission to take pictures. This was a mission to deter against nuclear war. Are we even following this anymore? The tough talk and the saber rattling between Kim Jong-un and President Trump has become so common, it's easy to miss just how close to war we literally get every single day. Yesterday, take this for example. It was the 72nd anniversary of the founding of North Korea's ruling Workers' Party. Kim Jong-un typically uses these holidays to have, you know, those big parades where, hey, look at all of our cool missiles and look, we can get everybody to wear a hat and it will spell out something like happy anniversary to us. But he also uses it for nuclear missile tests. And the last threat we heard was a possible hydrogen bomb test over the Pacific. Now, Trump has set the stage just last week when he said we're at the calm before the storm. And everybody began to wonder, what does that mean, Mr. President? Friday, the press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she confirmed that there were world issues, and that world issue, namely, was North Korea. Over the weekend, Trump doubled down and gave an ominous tweet. He said, you know, democracy hadn't worked for 25 years and that, quote, only one thing will work. So now, early yesterday morning, he called for a meeting with the defense secretary, Mattis, and secretary of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they discussed, quote, a range of options to respond militarily to North Korea aggression. Now, they've had these planning sessions 100 times since the crisis began. Why'd they pick Tuesday morning for another one? And then just a few hours later, B-1 bombers and Japanese and South Korean fighter jets are flying over the Korean Peninsula. Was it a show of force, or are we getting close to waiting for an attack order? The threat of war with North Korea is greater than it has been in 50 years, and Kim Jong-un apparently got the message yesterday and backed down. Will he continue to back down? Next time.
It's Wednesday, October 11th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
In the midst of twin medical crises, the 2016 presidential campaign was in full swing, and I was a conservative who didn't support Donald Trump. Protesters showed up at our home. People sent us hate mail. They called my office daily demanding that I be fired. Everybody was convinced I had destroyed my career. Our house had to be protected by guards. My two children were yelled at in the store by an angry man who was angry with me for not supporting Donald Trump. At school, other kids made sure that they knew that their dad was not liked in their household. Some of them wondered aloud if something bad was going to happen to us. These are the words of Eric Erickson.
Eric is, of course, radio host and commentator. The book is called Before You Wake, and he joins us now.
Eric, you're one of my heroes, brother. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
So, Eric, tell me, first of all, so for anybody who doesn't know, tell us about the twin health crisis that you were facing.
So I just assumed it was the stress of last year back in April, having protesters at the house and my kids yelled at in the grocery store. And I was having a harder and harder time breathing. My chest was tight and went into the hospital and got wheeled into an ICU unit, not expected to make the night. My lungs had filled up with blood clots, blood oxygen less than 90%, dying. And literally as they're pushing me into a CT scan to scan my lungs, a doctor from the Mayo Clinic called my wife and told her they think she might have a rare form of cancer. She needed to come out for a lung biopsy. And sure enough, she has a rare, incurable genetic form of lung cancer. And so we're going through all of that as we're having protesters at our house, armed guards protecting us, my kids coming home from school crying with other kids saying, I'm going to get shot for not supporting the president. Their parents hate me. It was 2016 was a rather miserable year in the Erickson household.
So you started to write this book because you didn't die and you wanted your kids to know the truth about you.
Yeah, I did. And I really did think for a while when it happens to if Christy and I, if something happens to us. I remember walking into the bedroom one night and told Christy I just did not know that I was going to survive the week. And she just burst out crying that she'd made a deal with God. One of us had to survive for the kids. And I thought I need to actually sit down and write to my kids. What do I want you to know about your family, about God, about faith, and what are your favorite recipes in case something happened to your parents? How would you make the cinnamon rolls I make for you? and it all wound up being a book that's part cookbook and part life lessons and part biography. Because, you know, I'm mindful if my kids were to Google me tomorrow, there's a joke at our kids' school that I'm the one parent they're not allowed to use as an example for Google because God knows what they'll find on me. some of it not. And I want my kids to know the true things, the bad things I've done, the good things I've done, and why I want them to believe in God, so on the other side of eternity we'll see each other again.
Eric, what did this going through all this teach you about prioritization?
Oh, that, you know, my life involves politics on radio, on the Resurgent, on TV, and I want my kids to understand that I think it is far more important for them to have a relationship with their next-door neighbor, whether they agree politically or not, than to be online yelling at people about the politics of the day, that there's so much more to life than politics.
You actually wrote something. I'm trying to find it here. I read it this morning again about how you just the social media thing is just you feel is a real problem.
Yeah, you know, I think Twitter in particular brings the worst out in all of us, myself included. You know, there's that scene in the Bible where Jesus, I'm actually in seminary right now, we studied this 2 weeks ago, where the possessed man comes to Jesus and he says to the demon, possessing, what is your name? And the demon says, Legion. And Christ throws the legion into the swarm of pigs, which run down the bank and drown in the lake. And I think what the Bible leaves off after that is that after the pigs have drowned and the demons get out of the pigs, they all got Twitter accounts. And you see that so much online. I mean, it brings out the worst in all of us. And I swear Hell's Army is on Twitter. And I want my kids to get their sense of self-worth by being ethical people created in the image of God, not because they got a bunch of retweets or likes on Instagram or Facebook.
I wanted to quote a couple of things. I always try to forgive. As I've gotten older and dumber, I've come to realize how much more I need forgiveness and how often people refuse to forgive. First of all, give me that.
Well, you know, there's a lot less grace in the world today. And I've done dumb things in my life, things I regret, and I find 10 years later people still want to throw them in my face of, mm-hmm. You're no moral authority on this because look at what you did 10 years ago. And I can't tell someone to get over that, but I can get over it myself with other people. I can show forgiveness to other people who have done good and not still define them by the bad thing they've done. I think more and more in this world, people want to define you by the worst thing you did, no matter how long ago it is. Mm-hmm. And if we do that to each other, we have no incentive to improve as people because we're always going to be defined by that.
So, Eric, I was up in Nantucket at a conference, a summit, and I was
popular.
Yeah,
is that the word you're looking for?
Yeah, I was pretty popular up there.
Nantucket.
Yeah, and so I was up there for 3 days, and it had been a horrible, horrible experience. And there were some other things that were happening in my life at the time that just, I mean, it broke me. It broke me in half. That weekend was just a really hard weekend for me. And I had to speak on Sunday a second time to this crowd. And I got up in the morning and I was in the bathroom in front of the mirror, and I was on my knees when my wife came in, and she said, "Honey, what's wrong?" And I said, "Mercy. I don't believe there's mercy anymore." And I've never understood the plea for mercy more than I do right now. It's a remarkable gift that I think Facebook and Twitter, you're exactly right, will never allow you to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's why we have an obligation to do it. And, you know, I decided a couple of years ago, I kept getting asked to give Sunday sermons in small churches around Georgia, because I talk about culture and faith on my radio show, and decided I'd probably ought to go to seminary, which was the greatest thing I did. Although the moment I went, I stopped getting the invitations to preach when I found out where I was going to seminary. But I love it. And we spent a lot of time on this topic. And one of the things that's made me appreciate is that our ways aren't their ways. And we need to be a light in the world. And whether you're a person of faith, you're a conservative, however you view yourself, you need to be a light in the world. And you start by showing grace and extending mercy to people who don't do it to you, and show that your way actually is a way forward. And I don't know that there's enough of that. And I fear that as conservatives look more and more towards political solutions to spiritual problems, yeah, that they're going to become more tribal like that as well, and not show grace and mercy the other way. And those of us who do, I think, stand out more and more. And that's not a prideful thing. It's a humble thing, knowing that you've got to be willing to extend the hand to people who don't want to extend the hand to you. But you still got to make yourself do it.
It's amazing. It is almost... if I ask a crowd of Christians, how many believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ? They'll all raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
If I say, will you really follow it? They'll all raise their hand. But even Peter denied Jesus three times. Even Peter. Worse, you know, Judas sold him out.
Right.
I'm not sure how many of us are even at Peter's level, because it's not that hard to offer mercy and forgiveness to people who are saying and doing horrible things to you or to your country or whatever, and trying to have compassion and forgiveness and empathy for them. And yet so many Christians see that as a sign of weakness.
Well, you know, one of the things I wrote in the book for my kids, and I hope one day they will read this, is that my wife has a very hard time with grudges, and she will admit it. And I have told her before, as I wrote in the book, that if you can't forgive someone, you are saying that your conscience was pricked more than Jesus's, who, having been beaten, tortured, bloodied, and nailed to a cross, on a cross before he died, said, "Forgive them." If you can't forgive someone for slighting you after what they did to him, and he said, "Forgive them," you're saying you were abused more than he was on the cross. So
she must love that when you say that to her.
Oh yeah, let me tell you, it puts me in the doghouse. But yeah, sometimes you got to make your wife feel guilty, because she's making me feel guilty every day. She guilted me into buying her a Harley. She said, "I've got cancer, you have to buy me a motorcycle." So I had to.
Eric, if God forbid something does happen to you, you know your kids will obviously read this book. But if everything goes okay, at what point do you become angry at them for not reading it while you're alive? What is the age?
Maybe when they're in their 20s. My 12-year-old has tried twice, and she can't get past the introduction.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good line. At least they know where their line is to be a good kid.
So, Eric, I have been concentrating lately on what matters most in my own life. And I think we can all get to this point to where you say, this is garbage. I mean, what I'm doing maybe is garbage. What I'm thinking is garbage. What I'm pursuing is garbage, whatever. And you start to look and say, what matters most? You're in a political position. What matters most?
I always fall back on the first question in the shared catechism, whether Catholic and Protestant, what's the chief end of man? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. And it doesn't matter what I do in life, as long as I think I'm glorifying God, then it's okay. And I'm in politics, and I spend a lot of time trying now to write about conforming my politics to my faith instead of my faith to my politics. And it has made it much more difficult for me in life to have that realization I have to do that. But I think as long as I'm doing that, I'm okay. And people may hate me, they may stop listening to me or stop reading me, but I think I'm in the right place.
How has that manifest itself with you?
It makes it much more difficult for me to find the easy solution, whether it's on immigration or crime or anything else. There are lots of easy solutions when you abandon your faith. And when you have your faith, there's a more difficult balancing act. But I'm challenged by it. And I like that challenge of doing that every day. And honestly, I sleep well at night. And there is an art to sleeping well at night. And part of it is understanding there are real priorities and politics isn't one of them.
Eric Erickson, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Eric Erickson, of course, he started The Resurgent, the website you should definitely be reading, as well as Before You Wake, Life Lessons from a Father to His Children is the new book. And we'll tweet that out at World of Stew and at Glenn Beck.
Most Americans only have a couple of days of non-perishable food in their homes, and if an emergency strikes, the grocery stores are going to be bare. When I was younger, my emergency food storage was sweet and sour packets. That was pretty much it. I had lots of those. I could survive on sweet and sour packages for a while because I had ordered so many Chinese packages to go that I... They always just threw too many in, so I had plenty of those, but that was it.
Not your fault. I mean, if they gave you too many, I think you keep them, you're saving.
That's right.
It's called conserving. We're conservatives.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I would have been down to, sweet and sour soup, by day number two. There is a better way. It's food storage. Emergency scenarios mean that, you're going to have to deal with a crisis. How are you going to deal with it? Well, you're going to deal with it poorly unless you're prepared. Mite Patriot Supply is a solution to be prepared. I depend on them for my food storage. You can too. This week, you can get their 102 survival food package, 102 servings, special price, less than a dollar per serving. That's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And honestly, it does not take an emergency to eat it. You're running low on funds, to make it to the next paycheck. This is a great way to do it. I mean, that's not what it's made for, but it's good food. Order today. Get tasty breakfast, lunch, and dinner shipped to your home for free. Call 1-800-200-7163 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. Dependable emergency food storage. Trust the seasoned experts at My Patriot Supply. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It's weird. Eric and I are on kind of the same path right now. And I don't know if you're joining me on this journey or finding this important in your own life of just finding out what is meaningful. I just want to do something meaningful in my own life. And I want to be part of good. And I want to raise my kids right and do what matters. And that's it. And today I was reading something, 27 rules for gentlemen to live by. And I'm like, I don't have any of these. I'm going to go over these tomorrow. The height of incivility is paying more attention to your wife, to your watch. These are old. Your watch, your pipe, or your notebook than to the person you're having a conversation with. Even if you're bored and tired, make no sign of it.
That one's been completely abandoned. That's the Fourth Amendment of this list.
This is not happening. Never interrupt a speaker. Sometimes even a demand for specification may sound impolite. It's even
What'd
worse.
You say?
Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, don't cut another person's speech short, even if you already know the story that's being told.
That's the worst one. When you're telling a story in a specific way.
Yeah, I got it. I know.
Okay.
Don't try to prove your point. Number three, don't try to prove your point by raising your tone of voice, insolent behavior, or put-downs. Endeavor to always be gallant and modest, free of any dictatorial attitudes. We are so far away from all of these.
Oh, my gosh. It's not even close.
No,
I mean,
not even close. I'm only on three.
Yeah, think of social media in this context.
Oh,
my gosh.
So I want to go through these tomorrow. We'll start in hour number one. I want to go through these tomorrow and see if we can actually try to live these. Just try to live these for a week, a day.
Oh, gosh. I was going to go hope for the end of the show, maybe?
End of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, how difficult would this be? Never, unless you're asked to do so, talk about your own business or your own profession. Devote little time and little attention to yourself. I'm out of business. I'm out of business.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, if it isn't my good friend Pat Gray, who is...
It is, actually. Yeah, it is.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Who does the radio program on the Blaze Radio Network immediately following this program.
What's it called?
It's called Pat Gray Unleashed.
Oh, what a great name.
Yeah,
it is. Mm-hmm. It is. It is. I was thinking about Unchained, but mm-hmm. I thought it would be better to go with Unleashed.
Yes, too many connotations there.
Yeah,
we would have run into.
Yeah, and so what that's done for me is I can never say the name of Pat's show because I always think it is Unchained,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It's Unleashed.
It's not right,
but he has been unleashed and he's got a lot to say, and he's here,
especially
to share.
Today.
What do you have?
Well, I've finally developed courage enough.
Oh boy,
to admit that I was sexually harassed by Harvey Weinstein.
No, I didn't know that you were even around Harvey Weinstein.
I think it's time. Well, I don't like to talk about this time of my life very much.
Right.
But I was an incredibly promising key grip and best boy for a long time.
You were?
In Hollywood.
And with Harvey Weinstein, a key grip and a best boy
exactly.
might take on different
and that's what he thought.
Right.
And when I rebuffed his advances,
right.
I never worked in Hollywood again.
Really?
Either best boying or key gripping. Neither
really?
One.
Wow.
The best boy jobs were the first to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it amazing that...
this might be taken as a little insensitive.
Absolutely. It should be, because I can't believe that for 30 or 40 years, everybody in Hollywood covered up for this guy. Every major star knows, every producer knows, every comedian knows. They all know that he's a douchebag, and they do nothing about it until now. Until now.
Incredible.
Why?
Incredible.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, both involved, by the way, with Brad Pitt, who was informed.
By the way, Brad Pitt said with Angelina Jolie... and he's on record, apparently, at the time that he went and confronted.
I think it was Paltrow, when he was dating Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
So that would be Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
He
yeah.
said he was going to give him a beating, a Missouri beating
yeah.
or whooping or
so,
something.
So, I mean, he is a guy who did
but
stand up.
Why didn't he go public with that? Just to, you know, save other women.
But here's yeah. but here's the problem. Because we were talking about this, and we didn't get in depth on it, but... I mean, let's be honest with each other. Not on sexual harassment or anything else, but did we not all know, and let's be honest, that Roger Ailes, we dodged a bullet. We're the only ones to walk out of Fox News that wasn't completely destroyed by Roger Ailes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different than sexual harassment.
No, wait. I know. Hang on just a second. Hang on. I'm going to bring it back around. You and I, we all know there are many things that we believe that we shall never say, but we shall never say the things that we do not believe when it comes to Roger Ailes or Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We have spent years until he died. We spent years avoiding and trying to tell the truth, but not pissing him off because he will blackball you and destroy you.
I mean, yes. Yeah,
you want to be careful, right?
Yeah, you just want to be careful.
There's no need to create additional enemies.
Correct. If we would have known something about sexual abuse, we all would have said
right,
it. No doubt.
There is a reason there to create an enemy, right?
Correct.
It is worth stepping up for something
like
that.
But hang on just a second. Mm-hmm. We're also a suicidal bunch. I mean, how many times have we...
stupid, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're dumb as a box of rocks. How many times have we destroyed our career because we're like, you know what? I got to tell the truth on this. Okay?
Most people are not... We spent 2 years doing that.
Yeah, and, most people... It was fun. Right. Most people don't do that.
That's
okay?
true. Yes.
So, when you're Harvey Weinstein and you're going up, you're just... Even if you're Gwyneth Paltrow, you're alone. How alone did we feel when we went and we said what we've said in the last 2 years? Even though people from behind the scenes will say, you're right, you keep it up. I'm not doing it, but you keep it up. Oh, really? Thanks.
Although we were alone on that quest, but I don't think these actors and actresses are alone. Because everybody knows and everybody felt the same thing.
No, but it's the same thing, Pat. It's the same thing. People... You know, and I know there are people that did not want to take the stand that they did on the air, but they took that stand because they were being told by their corporation, you won't have a job.
Yes.
One person lost their job over it, and it's Michael Medved. But people were told, you're not going to have a job, and so they acquiesced. That's the same thing, just a smaller version of it, but it's the same thing. So if Gwyneth Paltrow would have come out, it would have been her word, and I can guarantee you none of the other women would have come out at the time because they wouldn't want to be alone.
How about the Ben Afflecks, though, who knew the whole time? And now we're all of a sudden outraged.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Stop it. Don't try to play that.
He's not a good Batman either.
That's a really good point. That's maybe even a better point.
Okay. Good.
Ben Affleck is just not a good guy. You kind of wonder about.
He does seem that way.
Yeah. What's her name?
Jennifer Garner.
Garner. Oh. You know, we never talked about meeting her. I met her.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Was it good?
Very nice to you and your family.
She was the most gracious woman I think I've ever run into.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, she was.
And that was that the Nantucket thing?
Yeah. So she was there and I'm missing Cheyenne.
Your daughter.
All of a sudden, my daughter, okay, who's a huge fan of Jennifer Garner. And so I'm kind of looking around and she's gone for a while. I just think she has to go potty. No, I turn around and I see her over there just commanding an audience with Jennifer Garner. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I walk up behind Jennifer and I don't introduce myself to her or anything, and I just walk behind her and I give a dad stare to my daughter and I point to her like, get away from her.
Get away from the A-lister.
Would you stop it? And she looks at me and she says, Dad, it's Jennifer Garner. And I said, I know. Hello, Jennifer. I'm really sorry. Come on, honey. It's time to go. Leave. But she's going to get me. Can we get a picture? And I'm like, oh, dear God, stop this. And so she got, and Jennifer was so nice. She was like, no, let's get a picture. She was so nice. She tolerated my daughter for like probably 8 minutes.
Wow.
With a smile on her face. Okay.
That's awesome.
And you know, it wasn't hard, but that happens to people like that all the time, and they want to chew their arm off to get out of it.
Uh-huh.
And so I just looked at her. I said, I'm really sorry, Jennifer. It's, thank you so much. So we leave. 3 hours go by. I'm having dinner, and I'm having dinner with Jennifer Garner and Dick Cavett and the president of Rwanda. And
this is exactly my
literally
lunch
the
yesterday.
President of Rwanda.
Yeah. It was fascinating. Fascinating. But anyway, so I walk in and
weird circles. You
see,
yeah,
I know. And so Jennifer is standing there and I just kind of stop because she's talking to somebody in this hallway that I have to kind of go through to get to the table. And so I stop because I'm not I don't I don't want to see her again because I like her and I don't want anything wrecked.
Yeah, I'm always that with celebrities. I don't want them to ruin my impression of them.
So she doesn't stop talking and my wife is like, please, can we just go so we can sit down? I'm like, yes. So I walk up and I said, excuse me. And she said, oh, hi. And I said, I kind of look around like, me? You're saying hi to me? And I said, hi. I said, may I just say something to you? I can't believe how gracious you were to my children today. And she said, Mary and Cheyenne. Oh, they were so nice. You remembered my daughter's names 3 hours later. She was like, oh, they were so nice. It was so nice to talk to them. Blah, blah. She was so gracious.
That's why I have a Capital One credit card because of that interaction. I had to get one because she sold me on it.
Yeah, she's capable. She's capable of selling things. Yeah,
she is. So I don't understand the Ben Affleck connection there.
Yeah, I don't
because
either.
Because he does not seem to be like a good guy.
It seems, you know, if you read the front of the tabloids as you walk past on your way to your checkout stand, it seems like he was a real big dirtbag to her. You know, drinking, carousing, gambling. Ugh. Gambled away a lot of their money. He just seems like a dirtbag. And she seems sweet and innocent. A lot like the Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown thing when that first came around. They don't match.
Whitney.
Although Whitney
didn't
wound up matching better than Whitney.
Yeah. At the end,
Whitney
wound up matching.
Didn't wasn't the one who I would have been trying to get Cheyenne away from because of embarrassment. I would have been like, no, don't put that in your nose.
Pat Gray Unleashed. Coming up in just a few moments on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. You can subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud and all those places, as well as theblaze.com/TV.
Thank you, Pat. By the way, the ratings of the... Just got a report from the ratings of the Blaze Radio Network, and they're way up with Pat, and we're just thrilled. He's got so much to say, and he's funny and just really great. Listen to him after this broadcast. You can join The Blaze at theblaze.com/TV and radio.
Unfortunately, we only have 4 subscriptions left, so you have to hurry.
Only 4.
We're limiting the amount
of
subscriptions.
I heard
3.
It might be 2 now.
Oh, my gosh. You
better
hurry up right now.
Last one. We all hear stories in the news. Good guy uses a gun to protect his family from criminals, and he's the one arrested. It's weird because you don't hear about the good guys with a gun. You know, I did an experiment probably 5-6 years ago with The Blaze, and I said to the editor-in-chief, I said, I don't want you to tell anybody, but I want you to find a story. Good guy has a gun, thwarts criminal every day. And I said, I just want to put it up there. So he did. He found a story every single day. They're not hard to find. And within about a month, I think Pat was the first one that came up to me, and he said, Have you noticed how many times now criminals are starting to like be afraid of people with guns? I said, what do you say that? And he said, I see a story almost every day on that. And he hadn't put it together that it was, on The Blaze. That's the only place you're seeing that is on The Blaze. And I said, I'm going to let you in a secret. I did this as an experiment. I wanted to see if anybody would notice. The perception of people who are reading The Blaze was that this was going up. When indeed it wasn't. It was just that it was being reported on. Nobody else reports. So now when you do see a story that is in the paper where a good guy has a gun and he stops the bad guys, you will always see that that person was arrested. I told you a story a couple of days ago about the guy who was a military veteran. Guys come into his house, 3 guys with weapons. They come in, threaten his family. He holds them at bay with a gun. When the cops get there, he's arrested for, threats with a deadly weapon or whatever it is, assault with a deadly weapon. Are you kidding me? He was lucky enough to have the USCCA behind him. Now, this is the United States Concealed Carry Association. What they do is a lot of things. They do all kinds of training and everything else, but they also have this insurance that you need. If you have a gun in your house, you need this. So when he was arrested, he called the USCCA. He was a member, and he's arrested. I want my phone call. And he called the USCCA, and they immediately stepped in. They have the attorneys. They know exactly who to call in your town. They know what the laws are. They have the financing. This is what you pay them for with insurance. They got him home back to his family without the financial ruin, and he was facing 3 years in jail, and they just got him back home. You need somebody to protect and defend you if you're protecting and defending your family. Go to protectanddefend.com right now. Protectanddefend.com. Become a member of the USCCA. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Oh, so I'm going to get nothing but heat and grief today. I just tweeted something in response to the president.
Oh, no.
With all of the fake news coming out of NBC and their networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country. You know, Mr. President, what's bad for the country is the president of the United States saying perhaps we should get involved with a free press and obstruct them. This is what the Constitution was written for. They have a right to broadcast. They have a right. First of all, they don't have a broadcast license.
NBC doesn't.
No, the affiliates do. But you have to challenge the the local affiliates.
Which is NBC, not what he's talking about.
That's not what he's talking about. He doesn't even understand that they don't have a license. And they do have a right to be wrong. They have a right. I don't agree with NBC. I think they've been shameful. Shameful. And they've been shameful for a very long time. But who else are you going to shut down? Really? They're the ones with fake news. I mean, I stand for the right for Alex Jones to be able to broadcast, and there is no more fake news than him. But I don't want to see him run out of the public square. You cannot start telling people what they can and cannot say.
There's an interesting part of this document I once read. It was the first thing they listed under this amendment section.
Oh, yeah, but the amendments never mean anything. Those are like changes to your iTunes agreement.
Oh, really? Yes. Yeah. You just click OK.
You just click OK.
Agree.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we have fought how many years? We have fought the left trying to shut down talk radio for 30 years.
Do not go down this road.
How do you think it's going to be used by the next president?
Yes.
How do you think this? You can't. I mean,
you must stand for principles because this, as I said to the left, your guy is going to get out, and mm-hmm. the next guy you may not agree with. You don't want him to have all this power. Don't do this. I'm warning those on the right. Do not go down this road. You must stand for the Constitution and the First Amendment, and the only speech that needs protection is the speech you despise. He's wrong. It's dangerous. Don't go over the cliff.
Glenn Beck.